My guest today is His Excellency President Masood Khan of Azad Kashmir. President Khan, thank you very, very much for being our guest. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have to say that reports in the West, and certainly in Canada, are very sketchy, but our understanding here is that there's, for a considerable period of time, there's been massive demonstrations in the area called the Indian-administered Kashmir. And also, we are hearing reports, but again, not very much detail, of very sharp, heavy repression on the part of the Indian government using an excessive number of troops. We don't quite understand what are these demonstrations about from your point of view, and could you give us some detail of what you know about it?
Definitely. There has been Indian repression for decades, and it was intensified in 2016, July 2016. So that wave of repression continues unabated. But the recent demonstrations that you have referred to are because of India's moves, the occupation forces' moves, to rescind or repeal an article in its constitution, which is known as Article 35A. This gives special privileges and special status to the Kashmiris, particularly to the Kashmiri Muslims. And the Muslims in the Indian-occupied Kashmir suspect that this move by India to repeal 35A, Article 35A, is in fact intended to alter the demography of the region. And they are opposing it because they think that this is a conspiracy to reduce the number of Muslims, overall number of the Muslims in the Indian-occupied territory, so that if at some point in future there is a referendum, they could influence that referendum in India's favor. So, and yes, you are absolutely right that India has been responding with repressive power. They've been brutalizing Kashmiris, and they are conducting these cordon and search operations in which they demolish houses, they go after youths, and there are extrajudicial killings there. Also, they are facing these demonstrators with lethal weapons. They're using lethal weapons against them, including pellet guns. These are pump-action pellet guns, which, when used, blind people or injure them grievously.
Mm-hmm. What are the... What sort of demands? Do you know how they're making their case? What is it that is there a particular slogan or position taken by those who are demonstrating against the situation in the Indian-administered Kashmir?
The slogan that you would hear most loudly and most frequently is that go India, go back, leave our Kashmir. What do we want? We want freedom. Mm-hmm. So these are the slogans which are reverberating in the cities, townships, and villages of the Indian occupied territory. You know, it has history because way back in the 1940s, late 1940s, 47, 48, the Indians had committed themselves to holding a plebiscite in the Indian-occupied Kashmir, but later on they decided to occupy the territory. And the United Nations Security Council also passed several resolutions mandating that the future of this state, the state of Jammu and Kashmir, should be decided in accordance with the wishes of the Kashmiri people. And the methodology they prescribed was a referendum, a plebiscite. Mm-hmm. Now, that plebiscite has not been held, and India has created this myth that this part that they occupied back in 1947 is an integral part of the Indian Federation or the Indian Union. But mm-hmm. the Kashmiris, the bulk of the Kashmiris, reject this position. That is the background, because there's unrest, there's rejection of the Indian repression in the Indian occupied Kashmir. And also, there's a strong resolve by the Kashmiris that they would exercise their right to self-determination under all circumstances, and this can't be denied to them. This right cannot be denied to them.
Mm-hmm. It is remarkable. I know that the celebrated Indian author, Arundhati Roy, simply made a speech, I believe, in which she said, this is unfinished business we have here. And she was calling, I believe, for plebiscite to resolve the matter along the lines of the original decision in 1947. She, I understand, it came under considerable pressure and threat even to her life. What does that tell us about the conditions between India, Pakistan, Kashmir?
Well, people like Arundhati Roy or Pankaj Mishra or any actor or any representative of civil society who speak up for the rights of Kashmiris are treated as traitors, and they are persecuted in India. They're also persecuted in Kashmir, for instance. I mean, anybody who says that violates human rights of Kashmiris or don't commit crimes against humanity in the Indian-occupied Kashmir, the Indian government, backed by a very extremist group which is called Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, it's a Hindu extremist group, they start threatening them with dire consequences. There's a very high degree of intolerance in Kashmir and in India today. There's no room for dissent. And here are people who say that they haven't exercised their right to self-determination. They should be given this inalienable right to self-determination, which is their birthright. And I'm sure you must have also seen a report which has been recently published by the High Commissioner for Human Rights, in which he chronicles, I mean, the High Commissioner, Mrs. Radha Abdul Hussein, chronicles all the human rights violations that are being committed in India, in occupied Kashmir by the occupation forces with absolute impunity. Mm-hmm. And this is very scary account of what the Indians are doing. And they have given complete immunity from prosecution to the perpetrators of these crimes. One thing that they have said, I mean, one of the recommendations that they have made is that they have called on India to respect the right to self-determination of the people of Jammu and Kashmir, which is protected under international law. I think this is a seminal recommendation that has been made by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by the way, in terms of reaching a solution, I know that you've have been quoted and given speeches on the matter, saying that Azad Kashmir, for example, is quite willing to have an international investigation. If the United Nations want to have a fact-finding, they could come to your country, and they should be to the Pakistan administered. And also, of course, they should be permitted to be in the Indian-administered part. What has been the reception to this, your proposal?
Well, as you know, that this report by the High Commissioner makes a recommendation that, and this recommendation is made to the Human Rights Council, that it should establish, it should consider establishing a commission of inquiry. We should be given access to the Indian-occupied Kashmir and also to the Azad Kashmir, the territory which I represent. And I have welcomed any mission by the Human Rights Council or by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights to Azad Kashmir. We have nothing to hide. In fact, we have a lot to show and showcase here because we are trying to promote and protect human rights. We are also trying to invest in good governance, the rule of law, access to justice. We are also trying to develop this area economically. These are our priorities. So we believe, I mean, let me add here, that India's overall approach is that it can resolve the issue of Jammu and Kashmir through the use of excessive force, through the use of state terrorism, that it can, by using brute force, it can subjugate the people of Jammu and Kashmir. On the other hand, we say that force or naked force is not a solution. What we need is diplomacy and dialogue. What we need is engagement. What we need is to go back to the drawing board, to go back to the UN Security Council resolutions, mm-hmm. which prescribe a democratic solution. You can see the stark contrast in the positions that have been taken by India and Pakistan and the people of Jammu and Kashmir.
Yes. And Mr. President, people should know that, should they not, that this original request for the involvement of the United Nations going back to 1947, that was Prime Minister or Premier Nehru that asked for this, right? It was his request, or at least initiated by his government, asking for a UN Security Council resolution.
Absolutely. Mr. Nehru's government took the issue to the Security Council. The Security Council deliberated on the issue, and after several rounds of consultations, they came up with the solution, and they, in fact, established a commission to implement this resolution and hold a plebiscite, and a plebiscite administrator was appointed. But then, after taking this issue to the Security Council, and after accepting some of these resolutions which were passed by the UN Security Council, India decided to renege on its promise and annex the territory under its control forcibly with the Indian Union. Mm. Although they did that, they have a presence of 700,000 troops deployed in the
700,000? That has to be huge part of the Indian Army.
Yes, it's more than half of the Indian Army that is deployed there.
In the Valley of Kashmir?
In the Valley of Kashmir, also in Jammu and Ladakh, two other regions. But the maximum concentration of forces is in the Valley of Kashmir. That's the kind of force that they need to maintain their control over the Jammu and Kashmir territory. If it was an integral part of India, they would not need that kind of force.
Of course.
Because the people would voluntarily join the Indian Union.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking to President Masood Khan of Azad Kashmir, and it's a great honor to be speaking to you, sir. You visited Canada, and I think you were addressing the question of bilateral approach or an international approach, is my understanding. And that if I remember your remarks well enough, you feel that bilateral talks really are leading nowhere. Is that right?
Yes, you're absolutely right, because when I was in Canada, in Toronto, I talked to multiple audiences, and there I made this point that let's not deviate from the UN Security Council resolutions. There was no good reason not to implement these resolutions. And now I think that in the 1970s, 1980s, and even the recent past, in the early 2000s, we've had many rounds of bilateral consultations with India on Kashmir and other issues. But we made no headway at all, because whenever our delegations would sit across the table, India would argue that there can't be any discussion on the Jammu and Kashmir dispute, because Jammu and Kashmir is an integral part of India, and that was end of the conversation. And they would accuse Pakistan of aiding and abetting indigenous militants in the Indian-occupied Kashmir, and they would rather talk on that aspect than on the solution, a lasting solution of the Jammu and Kashmir dispute.
Yes.
So this has been this bilateral process, whether it was formal or informal, has proved to be a mirage. It has produced no results. Even the engagement on the Indian side has been half-hearted. So that's why I argue that the people of Jammu and Kashmir, the people of Pakistan, they need to go back to the international community, to the United Nations Security Council, to the UN General Assembly, to the Human Rights Council, to the parliaments of the world, the European Parliament, for instance, or the Senate and the House of Commons in Canada, or the U.S. Congress, or the House of Commons in the United Kingdom, because these are the places where opinion is formed. Opinion is formed in regard to international relations and also in regard to the promotion and protection of human rights.
Yes.
And as you can see that in the Indian occupied Kashmir right now, there is a huge, massive human rights and humanitarian crisis.
And in the last portion, Canada has a special role, do we not? Because it was General Macnaghten, a very distinguished name in modern Canadian history, who was the, I believe, Secretary General of the Security Council at the time, or the resolution, and he proposed that there be a plebiscite, and that it involved that there be no troops, of course, because how can people vote when there are soldiers, you know, standing over them? So Canada has a certain responsibility. And did I characterize his point of view right?
Yes, absolutely. He was the president of the Security Council at that time. And after due deliberation, he came to this conclusion. He had consulted all his colleagues and other members of the Security Council, including permanent members of the Security Council. And this was the dispensation that he suggested, and it was a very wise, prudent, and politic recommendation that he had made. And India had accepted this conclusion, so had we, so had the people of Jammu and Kashmir, so had the Pakistan at that time. But as I said earlier, India reneged on this promise. We are also grateful to Canada for contributing to the United Nations, contributing troops from time to time to the United Nations Military Observer Group in India and Pakistan. And lastly, I would say that Canada is a champion of human rights all around the world. I have worked in Geneva and in New York, and I've worked with many distinguished Canadian diplomats, and they were always in the forefront of promotion and protection of human rights. They're human rights advocates. They're human rights defenders from Canada. So I think that, as I said earlier, there's a human rights crisis unfolding in Kashmir. It is one of the most serious human rights crises in the world. And we need Canada's intercession, particularly of its parliament. Its parliament should take cognizance of the recent human rights violation, recent human rights report which has been published by the Office of the High Commissioner. This is not our report. This is not the report which has been produced by the people of Jammu and Kashmir or by Pakistan. It is a report which has been published by one of the organs of the United Nations.
Yes. And this issue is on the agenda at the United Nations every year. Is that right?
It is renewed every year.
Renewed.
It has been there. Yes, it's renewed every year. But this agenda item has been with the Security Council since 1948. And there has been no interruption in between. So it's an active issue. In fact, I have appealed to the United Nations Security Council to take cognizance of the situation in Jammu and Kashmir, because it is their responsibility in accordance with the Charter. Whether it is Chapter 6 of the Charter or Chapter 7 of the Charter, it is the United Nations Security Council's responsibility to work for the maintenance of international peace and security. And I think that international peace and security and regional stability are seriously threatened because of the Indian repression in the Indian-occupied Kashmir. So, and therefore, it is the responsibility of the Security Council to proceed and to implement its resolutions or devise ways to implement its resolutions on Jammu and Kashmir.
Well, President Khan, we are very grateful that you gave us this time. We're also very grateful you came and paid a visit to Canada. I know that as a result of that visit, we are going to pay much closer attention to the matter. And we thank you very, very much for joining us today.
I thank you.